The workday is done. Social media is heating up.
Ding, ding, boys. School's in session.
Welcome to Sports Talk with Personality. You riding with us?
Yes.
Great. Coming to argue?
That's a given. That's a given.
Even better.
Let's get the show going.
Clock out. Crank up.
People got the popcorn. Let's give them a show.
The drive starts now on WSJS.
Oh, yeah. It is a Tuesday drive. Fire us up, because the Charlotte Hornets have postseason action in their building for the first time in a decade tonight. I can't wait for it. I can't wait. Let's get this party started. Glad to have you in on a Tuesday right here on WSJS. So, 2022, that's actually the last time the Hornets participated in a postseason game. Like, you keep hearing the decade thing with the Hornets not having a postseason game at home since that span. But 2022, Atlanta Hawks, that's the last time the Hornets had a play-in game. They got smacked. Final score of that was 132-103. That was a starting lineup that featured LaMelo Ball, P.J. Washington, Terry Rozier, RIP, Miles Bridges, and Mason Plumlee. It's been a minute. Things have changed. Let's talk about it. So, Miami has had Charlotte's number this year. They really have. Like, they've won three of four of the games against the Hornets, and the first one, like, you got to go down the list here. The first one was when Colin Sexton was in the starting lineup, because if you recall, the Hornets started this year very, very OG Hornets, back as we all thought. Brandon Miller got hurt, didn't even get to the second game of the year. He was out in this game. You had, again, Colin Sexton in the starting lineup for him. The second of these matchups, not too much further down the line from that first one, was when LaMelo and Brandon Miller were hurt, as it was really feeling like, oh boy, this is Hornets basketball. Trey Mann was in the starting lineup. Sion James was in the starting lineup. Then you get a little closer to now. The third matchup, first week in March, this was probably the best game of the bunch, where Charlotte really should have won the game, but Tyler Herro lost his ever-loving mind from three, and the Heat ended up winning a close game late. And then the fourth one was about a month ago when the Hornets finally got a game on the Heat. LaMelo Ball, a 30-point double-double, but there was no Bam Adebayo for Miami. And that brings us to tonight, where the Hornets, you all know this, they play fast, man. And they shoot the lights out, as we know. With that lineup of LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges, Con Knipple, Brandon Miller, Musa Diabate in the post, it's been straight firepower offensively. Charlotte has the fifth most efficient offense in the league this year. And that lineup specifically is 31-9 this year. Yeah, that one specifically, which is the best record of any lineup combination, any starting lineup combination in the NBA. Not bad. Bam Adebayo of the Miami Heat. He was meeting with reporters the other day before they made their way to Charlotte. And here was Bam on what makes playing Charlotte, specifically at home, a bit of a chore.
They play a lot faster at home. So obviously you got to be aware of the shooters and how they run that offense with such a pace. And sometimes it seems chaotic. You got to be able to maintain through when they make runs, or if it's one of those big momentum swings, you got to understand how we can settle and get back in the fight.
So the Heat, they got their work cut out for them tonight, and they know that, but so do the Hornets. Con Knipple, who should be Rookie of the Year, quite frankly, not so sure yet if he's going to be, but he should be. His scoring and shooting, they've dipped a little bit recently. He's been a bit of a, for his standards, in terms of what he was doing, bit of a colder streak, not quite as hot, at least not to his season-long elite standards. The last four games, Knicks, Pistons, Celtics, Timberwolves, he had 14 points, 10 points, 13 points, 11 points. In the last 10 games overall, he's averaged 14.6 points a game. The shooting's been a little bit inefficient for his standards. Again, he's gone under that 15 points mark in several of these last final games, as I just laid out for you. And he's been held specifically to two or fewer threes made multiple times in that stretch. But Charles Lee, when he was talking to reporters yesterday, didn't seem overly worried about that. And I don't think you should be. You know, I really don't. It's been a grind, though, this last month of the year for the Hornets, because, I mean, they've been playing for seeding here. Like, a lot of these teams, like, we heard the number of, what was it, 168 players that were on the injury report or didn't play this final weekend of the regular season. That ain't the case for the Hornets. They were trying to win. They were playing everybody, because they've been playing for seeding for the last while, trying to get the best slot possible. They ended up with 9. But be that as it may, the beauty in that is it kind of helped, I think, Charlotte prepare for this moment where it's one and done. It's March Madness style. You win or you go home. They'll already be technically home, but you get what I'm saying. That's the beauty of this, being in that 7-10 seeding range and trying to find your spot for the postseason. Playing teams like Boston, Detroit, New York, and Minnesota in that stretch of the last four. Here was Charles Lee yesterday when meeting with reporters about how he felt like that stretch actually prepared them pretty well for this moment.
Yeah, past month has been great for us. You know, I think the guys did a great job of embracing that challenge, and the fact that you get to go play a team like Minnesota on the road again, and Boston on the road, and you're playing at home versus Philadelphia with a lot on the line, and we got to play this Miami team. And so anyway, there's been a lot of games and battles that we've been in, Detroit at home, that help prepare you for these moments.
It does do that. Could also make some of your numbers dip, you know, if you're tired, like maybe Con Knipple, but it does prepare you for this moment. So, the last thing I'll say is this. Charlotte's ready for this moment, man, as a city. They are ready. Because, as we mentioned at the top, and as it's been mentioned many times here in the last couple of weeks, this is the first time you've had postseason play of any kind at home in Charlotte in a decade. It's been a long time coming. Hornets fans have seen a lot of bad bump. And I don't even remember what it was like necessarily in 2022 when the Hornets got into the play-in, but I can guarantee you the vibes weren't like this. Like, yeah, they got into the play-in, but like, this is different. The only reason that this Hornet team is even in the play-in tournament at all is because they started the season so far behind and they had to work their way back up. Or else they would be a 3 or a 4 or a 5 right now in the playoffs, firmly. But they had to do some catching up, and they did do that. But the vibes are just different with Con Knipple. It's the most healthy we've ever seen LaMelo Ball. And they're getting national attention from national talking heads in the NBA in a very positive way, in a way that they have not in at minimum a decade. So, and they're getting a little bit more respect if you listen to people who don't really talk Hornets at all. You're starting to get some of that. It's a culture change. Charlotte Spectrum Center already sold out. It's already ready. DaBaby, I'm sure, is going to be there. He's got his front row seat. He's going to be ignorant, and he's going to be fired up, and I'm ready for it. I know you are too if you're a Hornets fan. Here was Charles Lee yesterday talking about what he wants from the home crowd, and actually gave a bit of a shout out to the Panthers here.
And I remember her calling me because we were on the road somewhere, so I obviously wasn't able to be there. And she's like, this is insane. Like, people are going crazy. This town is ready for, like, a winning team, playoff atmosphere, yada, yada, yada. So that was exciting to hear. And so I expect the very similar, same environment here tonight, tomorrow night. We need everyone to come. We need everyone to be engaged, up, down, whatever the scenario is, stay with it. You know, our team is going to continue to stay with it, and we just need the support from the fans consistently.
Talking about that Panthers playoff game, specifically there, at the beginning of that, and just what the environment was like there. And as somebody who was there at the bank, it was incredible. And when the Hornets are good, and if you talk to people that cover the Hornets a lot closer than we do, who are actually in Charlotte, when the Hornets have been good over the years, and it hadn't been much, like, they respond. This is the Hoop State. Now, it's mainly used for the college context, but it's still the Hoop State. And fans are ready for the Hornets. They're ready for this moment. Heat, Hornets, tonight. Going to get a great broadcast crew. Going to have Ian Eagle on the call. Stan Van Gundy as well. Cassidy Hubbard on the sideline there. So it's going to be very exciting. NBA on Prime has this game tonight. And we're ready for it. 336-777-1600 is the number to call. If you have thoughts on this game, who wins tonight? Heat, Hornets? Do the Hornets get it done tonight in this first play-in game? If they win this, they'll have to get the loser of the 7-8 game between Orlando and Philly. So that's what they have awaiting them if they win tonight. But 336-777-1600, that's our question of the day. Do the Hornets get it done tonight? Morgan Corson is the executive producer of this show. Do you have thoughts on this game, Morgan? What's your prediction?
It's going to be loud. I've been to the Spectrum Center a few times, not the last two or three seasons, but in recent years, and it's been loud. Through the struggles, I mean, they haven't been particularly great, as you've stated, and the Spectrum Center still gets loud for these Hornets.
They
love ball here in Charlotte. They love ball here in North Carolina. I have them winning tonight. It's going to be a scrappy fight all the way to the end, but LaMelo's going to do something wild to get this team fired up after a cold little streak they're going to have, and man, Bam's going to be able to do nothing about it, and it's going to be great.
I do think LaMelo's going to pop off and do some crazy stuff tonight, and that building is going to explode. The first time he does one of those one-foot step-back threes, Spectrum Center is not going to have a lid on it anymore, and I can't wait to watch it. Here's another great topic for today as we stay in basketball. Yesterday after we got off, we got the news that Dylan Mingo, 5-star recruit, number 8 ranked recruit in this class, he and Carolina have parted ways. Let's talk about that because that... A lot of people have thoughts on this, specifically that parting of ways term. Not he decommitted, parting of ways. It's been very consistent with all of the reporting here, whether it's Greg Barnes at Inside Carolina, Andrew Jones of Tar Heel 24/7. It's a very consistent term there. And people are going to talk about that. Here's the deal. I don't think this is as big of a deal as some are going to make it. I really don't. For starters, it sounds like, it ultimately was mutual, but the reason it was mutual is because it sounds like UNC was not going to pay him maybe what he wanted. And then Dylan was like, yeah, I'm good, and that's where the mutual piece comes in. But UNC, they parted ways with him because they weren't going to pay him what he wanted. Because Michael Malone, it ultimately means Michael Malone has something else in mind here. As he comes in as a brand new head coach, you know, this was a Hubert Davis guy, as we well know. And Dylan Mingo, he visited Chapel Hill this weekend. Banana Ball was going on this weekend in Chapel Hill. We have not talked about this, but it was. Bill Belichick out there coaching first base, throwing challenges. Great fun in Chapel Hill. But he visited over there this weekend, and it sounds like at some point in that stretch, that's when things kind of disintegrated between the two parties. And the reason they're not going to pay him what he wanted is probably because he has a bit of an injury history. He does. He's had an ankle injury that's really kept him out the majority of his senior year. And he's got some lower body stuff like knee, ankle again, I think, before that. Like, he's got a bit of a track record with this. And I think that's a big reason why Carolina didn't want to pay him necessarily what he wanted. And Michael Malone has an elite NBA background. Winningest coach in Denver Nuggets history. NBA Finals champion just a few years ago. He's coming in here with a real background in managing salary. And he's got a plan here. And much like why Luka Bogovac hit the portal over the weekend when he committed to come back to Carolina the day Malone had his introductory presser, it's probably because he's not going to be getting the amount of money that he wants to. That's what it ultimately comes down to. And if there's questions here, and if there's an injury history here, why are they going to pay him all of that money? Why are you going to do it? It's just called business. Good business decisions here. So, and that's money that can go elsewhere, such as to a guy like Juke Harris. Maybe you've heard of him, Deke fans. Sorry to throw that in your face. He came in, visited over the weekend. Sounds like they're going to be offering him a minimum of $5 million. You also got Terrence Brown, the Utah transfer. He was in Chapel Hill visiting yesterday. He averaged 20 points the last two seasons at Utah. He's got 3 years of college experience under his belt. 45% from the field last year, 32.7% from three. And he's got a visit coming up this week, I believe, at Kentucky and Kansas. So he's still weighing his options. Didn't give a verbal commitment to Carolina just yet yesterday. So if this was the way college used to be, this might be a bigger deal. But with the transfer portal, it's not as big of a deal. You might would want to have him. But again, not at the price that it sounds like he wanted. And I ultimately don't think this is going to be as big of a deal as some are potentially making it to be. Carolina didn't go out of the family to just do things the way they always have. They're trying to become a national elite power again. And Michael Malone, he's taking action. He's taking swings. That's what he's trying to do. So, Dylan Mingo. Carolina, they parted ways.
Ready, set, sports.
Let's go.
Bad traffic, good sports talk. This is The Drive.
Back at it on a Tuesday drive right here on WSJS. John Dell of the Winston-Salem Journal going to join us in about 10 minutes. But very quickly, before we get to him, to talk all things Masters, as he was out in Augusta this weekend, let's talk some Carolina Panthers, because Dan Morgan had his pre-NFL draft press conference today, and we'll dive a little further in this on tomorrow's show, but I did want to get to this one thing that he said, because you should not be surprised if the Panthers go wide receiver in the first round for a third straight year. You should not be surprised about that. So obviously you had T-Mac last year, big hit. But then you had Xavier Leggett with the last pick of the first round. They traded into the first round to get that last pick the year before. The jury's still out on XL. There's a lot of fans that would potentially argue he's not a hit. And I guess up to right now, he hasn't exactly been. But third year, things could change. We'll see what happens. Or he gets traded. I don't know. But the bottom line is they should get the best guy available. Because of the things that they did in free agency, picking up Jalen Phillips at the edge, Devin Lloyd as a linebacker, Rashid Walker as a tackle, they fulfilled a lot of their needs that they didn't necessarily have to draft for that in the first round. So they can have a little more wiggle room to get whoever the best all-around player is at that 19 pick, and that very well could be wide receiver. It's a very strong receiver class. Jordan Tyson looking at you. Mekhi Lemon looking at you. But Dan Morgan, he did speak on this. And here he was talking about he would have no issue going receiver 3 years in a row.
You know, with anything, we're going to take the best player. So if the best player we feel is that at 19, I wouldn't hesitate to draft another wideout. You know, I don't think there's a rule that says you can't draft a wide receiver 3 years in a row. So I'm not really going to, you know, I'm not going to box us in and say we're not going to draft one.
They do love their offense in Carolina. They love their weapons. And, you know, there is a question, but what are you going to do with all these guys? Because you got John Metchie that you added this year. You do still have Xavier Legette. You still have Jimmy Horn Jr. If you draft a guy, like, they're going to have another loaded receiver room this year like they did last year. So a lot of mocks I've seen actually have Carolina going offensive tackle at 19. Like, Peter Schrager did one recently that had that. I saw another one yesterday that had that. You should also take these comments with a grain of salt, too, because I don't think Dan Morgan is actually going to tell you, we're going to do this. He's not going to tell you that. But these are all possibilities, and it would not surprise me at all if they go receiver for a third year in a row in the first round. Something that really bums me out is the fact that we're not going to get Eric Collins and Del Curry on the call anymore this year for the Hornets. That really bums me out. Because games are going to be obviously nationally televised from here on out for the postseason, play-in tournament included. And I don't know. I feel like they should still do it in the first round or up till the first round. Let the local guys have it. Because Mike Breen, bang, was talking about this the other day. Do you like that, Morgan?
That was real good.
It's pretty good, right? That fans, like diehard fans, they want to hear their local guys on the call. And who better, like, to point out for that than Eric Collins and Del Curry? Chicken salad deluxe! Like, it just doesn't get any better than this. So that kind of bums me out that we're not going to get those guys on the call anymore this year. But just wanted to give a shout out to them. Also want to give a shout out to WSJS.com, because this is where you can listen to all of our programming, whether it's me right now, whether it's Colin Cowherd after us, Dan Patrick from 2 to 4 before us, Triad Today with Jeffrey Griffin, 7 to 9 a.m., The Daily Pulse with Stephen Beck, 9 to 10. Appreciate him. I had joined his show earlier today to talk a little NBA postseason and Hornets. But this is where you can go to get all of our programming, and you should. Because, you know, you can't be in the car forever. Can't be in the car for 2 hours. You know, you might want to go inside somewhere and keep listening to it. So do that. Go to WSJS.com. We would really appreciate that.
If that made you mad, it probably hit. I'm on my way. I'm on my way. Welcome to The Drive, the Triad's only live sports talk show.
Drive, and we welcome in John Dell of the Winston-Salem Journal. I think this is your first time in studio with me behind the mic.
Right, and the Greensboro News and Record. Let's not forget that. We're owned by the same company.
That's right.
So, got to give a shout out to the Greensboro News and Record.
We do. So, I got to correct something. You were not in Augusta this weekend.
No, I was there last week from Monday to Friday, and then headed back to Winston Saturday morning.
So, okay.
I got the good stuff, though. I mean, it was fun. It's always fun. 29 years in a row of covering the Masters. It doesn't stink.
Now, you were telling me in the break something about garden gnomes or something like that?
Yeah, the gnomes, those things are, I mean.
Morgan's ears perked up on that one. What do you know about the gnomes?
Yeah.
What do you not know about the gnomes? Yeah. They've been everywhere. They've been doing them for like 10 years now. They've got 10 of them. You can buy a briefcase with 10 of them. It's kind of cool.
And they keep saying, oh, this is going to be the last year. Well, they keep saying that every year, and then they sell out. Each patron, as they say, and even each media member, were allowed to purchase one. That's how, you know, in demand they are. But they're just one of the things to buy in the gift shop, the souvenir shop. I think my total was about $900 in about 16 minutes. Yeah. Wife's not happy with that. But the gnomes were a big thing. I wrote a story about searching for the gnomes and people trying to get the gnomes. And one guy was walking out with three of them. I don't know how he got. I don't know how he got three of them, but it was. I did a story on that and what you know. One of the why people buy them and why one of the guys was like, "I'm not a gnome guy. I didn't even look." So it's just to each his own. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the souvenir cup that you brought me here in the studio. That's going to go on my shelf here.
A souvenir cookie and a souvenir something else. What
else?
You
hooked me up. You got a candy bar.
Oh yeah, those things aren't very good. No, it's a cross between a pimento cheese sandwich and something else. No, it's just not. My son had one, and it's not very good. So.
Well, maybe I'll put that on display too. That's what I'll do. John Dell with us here in studio. So Rory McIlroy getting to the golf.
He's pretty good.
He's not bad. He's not bad. He was able to get the monkey off his back last year, but despite he had a back injury right in March.
Yeah, he didn't play for a couple weeks because of it. So, but he's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
That's what we sign up for.
Like I heard Jim Nance on Pat McAfee today talking about how he thought the back injury was really going to be a problem for him, how he was not playing for so long. But he didn't even have his best stuff for a lot of the weekend. How impressed were you with the fact that he was able to go back-to-back in the manner that he did?
Well, after two rounds, he was 90th in driving accuracy at the Masters. There were only 91 golfers in the field. So he was hitting it all over the ballpark and still managing to shoot what he had the largest lead in after 36 holes. So. Yeah. That just proves how good he is and how good a scrambler he is. We were talking to Freddie Couples, the 66-year-old who made his way around. He won it. He won his green jacket, and he gets to play till he can't walk anymore. But he said if the course is set up like this every year and Mother Nature cooperates, Rory may never lose again at Augusta. Incredible. So he just loves that place. He's got the game for it, the imagination, and it was fun to watch even when he almost gave it up. But Cam Young was right there. Our weight guy was right there. And then, of course, Scottie Scheffler, who never had a bogey in 72 holes, yet didn't win. He was one stroke behind Rory.
That one putt that he
needed. The one putt on 17, I don't know how it didn't fall.
And it was right there.
Yeah. So, you know, Scottie and Rory are going to be battling for the next few years, and that's going to be fun to see.
Well, I want to ask you about that. I'm glad you went there because with the Rory and the Scottie, I guess you could decide for yourself who you think the best golfer in the world is right now. How would you evaluate the state of golf right now with those two going at it? And I mean, we saw an incredible leaderboard on the back nine on Sunday, just all those names, Cam Young, one of those. Morikawa started to get up in there. Like, how would you evaluate the state of golf right now?
Well, it's pretty good. I mean, I'm partial to the Tiger Phil era. That was, you know, that's hard to beat. I'm sorry. and I think it made it a little juicier because they don't really like each other.
Scottie, I think Rory and Scottie kind of do.
Yeah, it's more chummy these days than it kind of used to be. But I'm fine with that. And there are a lot of young stars out there. I mean, there's just so many, like Xander Schauffele, he's kind of been the favorite for the last 4 or 5 years. Guys like that, and, you know, I think it's time to give up on Jordan Spieth. I don't know. I mean, you know, you forget about him. And Bryson, he didn't show anything.
How about that? And what was going on with him?
I don't know. He's got a lot going on in his head, apparently. But I think, you know, my personal opinion on the LIV golf guys is there's not that really great competition.
Because they didn't do good at all.
No, Tyrrell Hatton's about the only one that did pretty well. I just think they don't grind like you do on the PGA Tour, and I think that catches up with them when they play in the majors.
Yeah. John Dell with us here on WSJS, talking some Masters, talking some golf. Let's talk about Cameron Young, that pro deke, because, by the way, sweet MOV logo on his collar.
Yeah,
I love that. He looked like he was going to be in the mix all the way till the end. And his luck ran out on 9. He put one into the trees, and then it just didn't kick back into the fairway the way he needed to. What was your takeaway from Cameron Johnson's weekend?
Cameron Young, you mean? Yeah.
Or Cameron Young, yeah, that's right.
Cameron Johnson played at Carolina.
Yeah, that's a basketball player. Basketball's on the mic. Shut up, Morgan.
Cam, you know, he was 4 over after 7 holes. And Thursday, and I thought he was done.
Yeah,
I was like, oh boy,
shot out of a can.
And then he was still 4 over after 11 holes, and then went you know, was 9, 14 under over the next 25 holes to jump right into contention. Mm-hmm. He's got the game. He's got the length, definitely. The putting touch, if he would have made one or two putts on the back nine on Sunday, he's right there. Mm-hmm. He's in the playoff. And he just couldn't get it done. But I tell you, he's got Jerry Haas, the golf coach, just tells me he had a work ethic and a drive like he's never seen. I talked to Davis Womble, one of his teammates, when Davis was a senior and Cam came in as a freshman. He was just a gamer. And so that's kind of what he plays. I mean, his wife, they got three kids. He's 28. I talked to his dad. His dad's a world-renowned teaching pro. Up in Sleepy Hollow, New York, up in upstate New York, and his dad was just saying it's either feast or famine here because he missed two cuts and he's got two top tens. Now he has three top tens in his five Masters. He's going to get it done in a major, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's the U.S. Open.
Did you see, by the way, that that Wake Forest Golf, they introduced a new logo, the Swingin' Deacon?
Swingin' Deacon, I saw that. They're trying to raise money, so you got to have new new logos and new swinging Deacons. It's pretty cool. I like it. I mean, it's kind of the old-style Deacon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was cool to see Cam. And then Michael Brennan, he's a PGA Tour rookie, 24-year-old Wake grad, his first Masters. He was supposed to be playing on the Korn Ferry Tour this year, but bypassed it because he won last year on the PGA Tour on his first PGA Tour event. He got a sponsor's exemption, and he won. And that's so how cool. He's qualified for the Masters. He finished tied for 24th, I believe, in his first Masters. Great getting to know him. I mean, I knew him when he was a player here at Wake, and which wasn't that long ago. So it was cool to see him do well, met his family and great people. His brother Ryan got to caddy for him. So it was a good week to be in Augusta and follow those two Deacons, as well as a couple Carolina guys.
Now, Morgan, you brought something to my attention earlier. I want to get you in the mix here, because he was explaining to me that the green jacket, see, I didn't know that you didn't get an additional one.
No.
Like you just, it like as Rory said, it still fits. Like you just have that one. But I also didn't know that after a year from you winning it, the green jacket can't leave the premises.
Correct.
Is that
correct?
Tell me about that, because I didn't know this.
Yeah, they have a jacket that's theirs whenever they're on property, and that's stored in their champion's locker room.
Wow.
And so that's the one they wear when they're on property. Now, I do believe they do get one for a year, like to take to David Letterman. Well, not David Letterman. You know what I mean.
Johnny Carson.
Yeah, Johnny Carson. It's to the talk shows. And so they do get to take it around, but the one that they put on that you saw at Butler Cabin, that doesn't leave the premises.
Wow.
Yeah.
So like if I wanted to put it in my own personal trophy room, I couldn't do that.
No.
All that hard work for nothing. Unbelievable.
Well, and he didn't have to, since he won back to back, the chairman put on the old, the one that he had already. So, Scotty didn't have to wait around and put it on for him like he had to do a couple years ago. So that's just, they have a lot of little things they do there at Augusta that maybe a lot of people don't know, but it's it's their tournament. They can do whatever they want.
It is a very special place. It is that. Let's talk a little bit of basketball, because I saw Wake Forest. They picked up from Virginia Tech a German 7-footer,
yep.
Antonio Dorn. He's got a couple of seasons of eligibility left. What can you tell us about him?
Well, he's a 22-year-old rising sophomore, so he's a little old. I just kind of think back to Mike Young at Virginia Tech and and Steve are pretty good friends. I'm just, what's the phone conversation? Like, man, you know what? I'm done with this kid. You take him. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he played a lot. I mean, he started, I think, 7 or 8 games and played about 22 minutes a game. 22 minutes a game. Maybe he'll do better with, under Forbes. I know Wake's got a couple of big 6'9 twins coming that they're going to be a lot bigger. And then they got a point guard from, what's the name of this? Merrimack.
Merrimack?
Merrimack, yeah. That's the team they're playing in football next year. Oh. So they got a point guard that averaged 18 points a game in that league. I don't even know what league they play in. And because Isaac Carr is the only guy left.
I know.
But the other side of it, they were 18 and 17. So how many guys do you need from an 18 and 17 team? It's a new era. I mean, you got to reload.
You need money to do it.
And you need money to do it. I don't know how much Wake has. I know they did have a deal for Juke Harris, but he decided not to take it. I do know that. But you know, Duke may be getting $3-4 million from another school somewhere. So I think a lot of Wake fans are going to be upset if he ends up in the ACC.
Like Carolina?
Or NC State, I think.
He's a Michigan fan, so obviously he's going to be
biased. Well, Michigan is, you know, him and Elliott Cadeau's coming back.
He is.
So that might not be a bad combination. But I think Wake fans hope he goes to the NBA. Hopefully he'll get drafted. They'll say his draft stock is, if it's low first round, I think he may go. But you never know. I mean, he's only 20. I think, you know, Duke's a young kid. So, I mean, you know, it must be nice to have a chance to get that money and still maybe try and get your degree.
And he's got a good head on his shoulders. Yeah, he seems to be a very smart kid.
I just think in my time, in the short time of the NIL era, I thought he was maybe the most loyal one of everybody. But money talks. So if he gets another offer, I guess more power to him.
Well, and he was so good that offer is probably going to be pretty significant, not marginal.
I think if Wake would have gave him what the other schools would, then it'd be Juke on the court and us three out there because that you know there's just isn't as much money to go around at some of these schools. So you know, we'll see where he lands, but it's definitely something interesting to watch.
John Dell, Winston-Salem Journal, Greensboro News and Record. I appreciate you for coming in. Are you going to be at Bowman Gray this weekend?
The opener is Saturday night.
All right.
And I got a story tomorrow in journalnow.com. Burt Myers.
All right.
Burt's a legend out there. He's 50 years old, and he doesn't slow down. He's a legend, and he'll tell you he is. No, I'm just kidding. Bert is he's confident, good guy. Him and his family, they're real good people. And I you know, it's fun going out there. The opener is supposed to be nice weather, so it should be a big crowd. And I'll head to the Wake spring game in the afternoon, and then head to Bowman Gray Saturday night.
Now, Morgan, big racing guy over here. You going to be going out to the Madhouse? You going?
I'll be there.
You know, they raised the prices from 12 to 15, just so you know.
That's okay.
Yeah. It's still the best bargain. Free parking. Yeah. You can bring your own food in.
Wow, really?
A cooler? Yeah. You bring your own food in. They don't.
Did not know this.
And $15 is pretty competitive, too. Some places I've been seeing have gone up to 20 now. Yeah. So that's 15's a bargain.
Yep. It's and this is the first time they've raised the price, I think, since 2019. Is when they had, I think, at 10, and then they raised it to 12. Now it's 15, but that's still a good bargain. What's a movie? You know, $24 to get into a movie? I don't know.
Something like that for a couple of tickets. You're asking the wrong guy. You're right. That's not my forte. Well, it is now, thanks to Josh Graham. John Dell, thank you so much for being here. We'll do it again sometime soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Hit it. Go! Let's begin.
It's on!
Triad Sports Talk for real sports fans. You're on The Drive.
Appreciate John Dell for coming in, talking some golf with us. Appreciate that. Very busy guy, John Dell. So, one thing I wanted to get to here was my bets from last night. Very, very solid night. And I will admit, the few that I got wrong made me want to throw something at the wall. Let's talk about it. That's right now in Dalton's Dollars.
It's time to cash in. Welcome to Dalton's Dollars.
Show me the money!
Show me the money.
Breaking down the board and building the bankroll.
All right. So, all in all, I went 3-2. 3-2. Pirates money line. That's one we had against the Nationals. That hit.
Show me the money!
Did you see the score of this game?
Yes.
Pirates beat the brakes off the Nats 16-5. Paul Skeens was on the mound. It was never in question. Which brings me to the one of the bets that I got wrong. That just... hate it when this happens. I had Paul Skeens over 6.5 strikeouts. Guess how many he had?
Six.
Six! Six! So frustrating. Which brings me to the other one that was very frustrating given the circumstances. Yankees. He's laughing, Morgan, because he knows exactly what I'm talking about here. Yankees, 1.5-point favorites against the Angels. What happened in this one? Two home runs apiece. Aaron Judge, Mike Trout. Yankees win 11-10. Awful beat. Just terrible. Ugh. But then we get in the positive again. Puts me in a better mood. Dodgers, money line against the struggling Mets. That hit.
Show me the money!
Dodgers shut out the Mets 4-0 to close out the night last night, at least in terms of the schedule. But I also had Matt Olson, Braves taking on the Marlins. Marlins beat the Braves 10-4, but I had Matt Olson over 0.5 hits. He had a couple.
Show me the money!
So that's last night. And that brings us to tonight, where you've got the Hornets and the Heat going at it in the play-in tournament. It is the first game of the night in play-in action. So, just looking at this, I've won a lot of money on the Hornets this year. The Hornets currently a 6-point favorite at home tonight. I think I'm going to take the Heat, 6-point underdogs.
Show me the money!
I got to be careful. I can't bet with the heart. Got to bet with the head. I have been burned by the Hornets doing this a few times this year, but that was also against crappy teams where the line was like 13, 15 and a half, and I'm like, that's too many. And then the Hornets beat them by 30. But this is the postseason. The Heat, they've taken 3 of 4 from the Hornets this year. Now, I've got the Hornets winning tonight, but I think it's going to be like a clincher. I don't think it's going to be comfortable for either side. I think it's going to go down to the wire just the way it should. So, going to do that. I'm also going to take... So, I get minus 108 odds, by the way, on that Hornets pick. I also think I'm going to take LaMelo Ball to score 20+.
Show me the money!
I get that at minus 245. I think he's going to have a night. I think he's going to go off. I think he's gonna really put an exclamation point on display for everybody tonight. So that's the two picks. Gonna keep it simple. Hornets, 6-point favorites, and then LaMelo Ball, 20 or more points. That's what we're gonna do tonight. Gonna keep it simple. It's been Dalton's Dollars. So you and I, Morgan, were talking about Yankees Angels earlier in the day. Didn't you find like an interesting fact, an interesting nugget about this game?
Yeah, you know me, always looking for the good nuggets here.
You get the good stuff. You do.
Last night was the fourth game all time that two multi-time MVPs at the time of the game hit multiple home runs each. June 21st, 1956, Campanella and Stan Musial. July 3rd, 1962, Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle. And just 3 days later, they run it back. And on July 6th, Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle, two home runs each as well. And then last night, of course, Aaron Judge and Mike Trout.
That's the good stuff right there. The battle of the three-time MVPs, two home runs apiece. Oh man, it was such a show to watch. Yankees finally snapping that 5-game losing streak. Hopefully this is the turn for them to get right again. That's why I'm wearing the Yankee cap today. But I actually want to go to the other side of this game, the Angels. Mike Trout needs to get out of there. I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of seeing his all-time talented self. Like, before Ohtani came along, we talked about Mike Trout as if he was the best player in baseball, because he was. And it kind of became either him or Bryce Harper, but I think more people still leaned Mike Trout. There were people that wanted to have the conversation, like, a handful of years ago, maybe best player of all time type stuff, like, in just his sheer talent that he has as a fielder on the defensive side of the ball, the arm, the bat, of course. But then Ohtani came along and he kind of stole that conversation away. But Mike Trout is still one of the best players in the major leagues. And he's being wasted away in Los Angeles. Can you look up how many times has he made the playoffs in his career? Is it none? It's so disappointing. I don't care. Like, would I love for him to come to the Yankees? Yes, of course I would. I want him to go anywhere. He's one time. Okay, I was about to say, I thought there was one time in there that he's been to postseason. I'm so sick of watching Mike Trout waste away his career in LA with the Angels. That's amounted to nothing. Go anywhere else. Anywhere else.
Will Dalton doesn't just talk sports.
A gentleman never talks down to anybody.
He debates them. Talking sports in the triad like nobody's mom is listening. This is The Drive.
Tuesday Drive, right here on WSJS. So, I was already thinking about doing this, like a segment where you rank things, like a top 5, top 10 list, whatever it happened to be, because I like that, I enjoy that. But I even got further inspiration for it over the weekend, because I saw that new Panthers running back, A.J. Dillon, was in town. I don't know if this was his first time coming to Charlotte. Kind of made it seem like it was. But in addition to coming to Bank of America Stadium, hanging out over there, he also went to Bojangles for the first time. Which got me thinking, what if I, like, rank, like, he put out his order here, and I just got to think of, what would be a good ranking for Bojangles food? And then I said, you know what, enough's enough. We're going to bring this top 5 ranking list to fruition. Each week, we're going to rank stuff. At some point in the week, we're going to rank stuff, a top 5 list. And just to give you a quick look before we get into it at what A.J. Dillon, what his menu or what his order looked like, he said this was courtesy of his comments because he had explained via his ex page, that he was in Charlotte for the first time and he was going to be going to Bojangles. What should I get? I'm new to this. And he ended up getting, let's see here, a Cajun filet biscuit. Did that. Got some bow rounds. Got an iced tea, got a Bowberry biscuit, and he said the verdict was top tier. So I think it's safe to say A.J. Dillon's going to get a Bojangles sponsorship. That tends to be Bryce Young's category, but unlike Bryce Young, who we've never actually seen eat said Bojangles that he's representing, I'm looking at the table here of A.J. Dillon, and he's got some good stuff here. Real good. He ordered this stuff up. So anyway, this is a segment that we call the No Rules Top 5.
The No Rules Top 5.
And this is show business mixed with a little monkey business.
Rank it.
Huh? What?
Run it.
I like this music. It's good. Kind of sounds like the Nintendo Wii theme a little bit there in the background. You hear that? A little bit? Yeah. All right, so I guess we should use the 5-1 counter for this when we do this. Guess we should do that. This is going to be my list for today. I'm going to rank the five best things on the Bojangles menu. That's what I'm going to do. Let's fire it up. Oh, is it going to be a little quiet because it's coming out of the same thing? This is production. This is us producing something live on air. So actually, don't worry about the counter. We'll get that done in post. This isn't a live radio show or anything. We'll just edit it out. Number five. I think this is where I go bow rounds. It's what I'm going to do. Very crispy, very seasoned. You know, I love hash browns. I love them in this format. They go great with anything you get. Whether it's the, you know, one of the biscuits there, or if you just want to get it with some, you know, with some tenders, some bow tenders, like whatever it is, bow rounds. That's what I got at number five on the list. I think number four, I think this is where I'm going to put the fries, the seasoned fries. It's kind of tough to beat those, right? What's your typical order, Morgan, when you go to Bojangles?
I'm not a big fried chicken guy.
All right.
I don't go there. If I could choose between fried chicken and a burger, I'd probably get a burger. But I've been there recently. Got two Bowberry biscuits.
Yeah.
And the little chicken poppers.
Oh, dude. Those are so good.
And the fries were top tier. Along with the mac and cheese. Mac and cheese was good, too.
Yeah.
You got to get a tea when you go.
I got a feeling that people are really going to dislike this list because, like, I put bow rounds list. I don't know. It's just where I got them. But I put the fries at number four. Number three, I think this is where I'm going to put the Cajun filet biscuit. I love the Cajun filet biscuit. It's terrific. It's cheap. My dad always gets this when he goes to Bojangles. It's very simple but effective, as we like to say. So, I can't get enough of the biscuit there. It's top tier. It really is. We're moving up the ladder here. We're moving up the ladder. Number two on my list. This is where I put, like, actual chicken. Like, the actual, like, chicken thighs and the leg that you get in the box. This is where I put that. I'm probably doing a terrible job of describing this, but I don't care. It's my list. Get over it. Sue me. The chicken breast, the chicken leg, or the chicken, whatever. I think it's a chicken breast. But the pieces of chicken that you get in, like, the bow box. That's where I put this in my list. So we got bow rounds. We got the fries. We got the biscuit with the Cajun biscuit. And this is where I have, like, the actual pieces of chicken at number two, which only saves us one more spot. One more spot. Iced tea. No, I'm just kidding. I had to throw some love to iced tea in there. I don't even get iced tea when I go to Bojangles. That sugar water. Are you kidding me? The Bowberry biscuit. It's the only place for it on this list. It's number one. Like, you can go. You don't even need to get a meal when you go to Bojangles. You can just be in the mood for a Bowberry biscuit. That's it. That's all you need. Bowberry biscuit is number one on this list. So in review, because I'm going to put this on social media so I can get roasted for it. Number five, bow rounds. Number four, the fries, the bow fries, whatever they call them. Number three, got to give it some love, but it can't be at the top yet. Cajun filet biscuit. At number two, the actual chicken, the chicken breast, the chicken leg in the box, in the bow box. Very crispy. Morgan can't handle it. And number one, the king of the Bojangles list, undisputed, the Bowberry biscuit. Your thoughts?
I mean, I don't know why you trash an iced tea and you get a Bowberry biscuit. That's a sugar biscuit.
Yeah, but it's a biscuit. It's got substance. It's food. 336-777-1600 if you want to talk crap about my list. Or if you liked it, please call. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear. I want to hear your thoughts and your opinions and anecdotes. That's this is so stupid, but I'm having a blast. All right, Morgan, you have a very interesting top five that I'm very excited for. Let's do it.
My top five.
Yes.
Is the top five most iconic NASCAR paint schemes
yes.
of all time. All
right, let's do it.
I couldn't pick a top five, so I have an honorable mention at six here. And it's the 1989 Daytona 500 winning Darrell Waltrip's Tide car.
Yes, we got a picture. If you're watching on YouTube or X, we've got this stuff on the screen here. Because, I mean, you can't do this without looking at the cars. You can't do it.
Orange on the front, yellow, white on the back. It's... The Tide car is iconic. When me and my brother play the racing games, we yeah. fight over who gets the Tide car.
I was always a big fan of the Tide car. I was a fan of the one like in the early to mid 2000s as like the logo kind of got a little more modern. I didn't even think about this one, but this one, it's a gorgeous car.
And number five.
Yes.
The 2004 Dale Jr. Red Bud number 8. The car never changed.
The classic.
The car never changed. The roof became black for a little bit, but the base scheme never really changed.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with this scheme. And he brought it back last year for his late model car.
He did.
And they loved it.
The thing that I always loved about this car was that the 8 was essentially the same font as Dale's 3. It was just an 8. The Bud sponsorship was very controversial, I think, when they first did it, just because it was beer and, you know, they didn't know how that would play, I guess, with some fans and families. I don't know. But I had heard I love the Dale Earnhardt documentaries, and I remember that was a whole thing. But it was a big hit. Iconic car.
Number 4, the 2007 Jimmy Johnson Lowe's scheme with that beautiful,
yeah.
iconic highlighter yellow on there. Show it on the screen. There it is.
Yep.
It's got the black on it. He won his second of five straight NASCAR titles with this paint scheme. Sorry. It's ridiculous. Yeah. They were changing the playoff, how you won the title, every year or two, because he kept on winning it so convincingly.
It got to a point where it almost was just like a foregone conclusion. Oh yeah, Jimmy Johnson's gonna win. Especially when Jeff Gordon was out of the mix. It was Jimmy Johnson's league. It just was.
Yeah, him and Tony Stewart and Carl Edwards got into it a few times, but it was pretty much Jimmy's at that point. But the lowest scheme will forever go down as one of the most iconic schemes in the game.
I agree.
But this next one is the best one from the Hendrick Group here. The Rainbow Warrior scheme from 93 to 2000 belonging to Jeff Gordon. This car propelled NASCAR from the 90s to the 2000s. When they got that roaring boom in the 90s, this was one of the two cars that made it happen. Just a beautiful scheme.
This should be number one on the list.
Well, the next number one on the list, you'll see why number one is here. But
I love this car. I'm a Jeff Gordon fan through and through. Jeff Gordon was like my first sports fandom obsession, like his car as a young kid.
My mom met Jeff Gordon.
Did she?
Yeah, at Darlington in 97.
That's so cool. I loved the rainbow car. I was so... At first, very upset when they switched over to the flame car, although that's iconic too. But I had so many diecast Rainbow Warrior cars, that DuPont 24. Love it.
In that 7 or 8 year time period, he won 52 of his 93 races and 3 championships.
Dominant.
At number 2, you knew it was going to be on this list. Richard Petty's 73 Dodge Charger. You could have picked any of the Petty Blue and the STP Orange. But this one's my favorite. I like the stripes coming up the hood onto the roof. And you can see Petty in there, Richard Petty in there, just steering away with one hand.
Yeah.
Like it's no thing.
The racer's edge.
But
down under the hood.
I've been to his museum just down the road, and there's so much cool artifacts. That's such a rich history with that family. So
that's an iconic car.
This car's got to be up there. He's had so many good ones, but that's my favorite. And number one.
Gee, I wonder. I wonder what it is.
The 1998 Daytona 500 scheme from Dale Earnhardt Sr.
It's got to be.
You could have picked any of the black Intimidator looks. I personally like the Wrangler look a little better, the yellow and blue. A lot of people didn't know about that one, but you raced yellow and blue for a little bit, but this one's iconic. But I picked this picture here because you got him. He just threw the car pretty much into the infield and just tore up the grass, but he won his 20th. He won it in his 20th attempt.
It took him a long time to win that darn race.
In 91, he was leading and hit a seagull, and his car just destroyed. He hit a bird before he won it.
I know. I'd seen that.
But yeah, that has to be it. Those, just iconic. Those are my top five iconic NASCAR paint schemes.
What a list. Great job. No, I mean, as much as I love Jeff Gordon and I love the rainbow car, it's almost like sacrilege if you don't have the black three as number one on any list. I'm sorry. It just is.
So, fun fact, his merch, like the three merch, is still top 10 each
year.
Oh,
I know.
Still.
He and Jeff Gordon going at it in the 90s and early 2000s, or not 2000, it was the 90s. It was the 90s. That was really what started the whole memorabilia thing, the memorabilia movement. But Dale, I think, is the one who really started that. Jeff Gordon just kind of added fuel, no pun intended, to that fire. Because that was the whole thing. Like, he was like, oh, I can profit on this. I can make money. And that's really when that revolution began. So, I mean, the three car in general, the black three, is the one, but I'm glad that you went detailed here with specifically the one he won that Daytona 500 in.
I have this diecast.
I do too. It's like a toy where it's like you got the car, they're in victory lane. It's the victory lane series, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I have one of these where it's the car and it's Dale on top of it, and yeah, it's a pretty cool deal.
The one I have, he's in an active pit stop.
I have the Jeff Gordon of that. Now we're just nerding out. Love it. So that's our No Rules Top 5, the first inaugural edition of it. And that's what you're going to get once a week. It might be sports themed, a la racing paint schemes. It might be Bojangles. It might just be. It might be breakfast foods. Maybe you got that coming your way next.